Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of November, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, you can hear that Steve is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, so there will be no Ustream today, as Steve neglected to give Dennis the correct cable. However,
he's probably got it in the trunk of his car as he's barreling across, just passing Chicago.
I believe, is where he is right now. But Dennis has graciously deigned to join us.
Yeah, I've got my internet pants on, so I'm all set.
Perfect. I see that pockets everywhere every device you have. All right, let's start with the news. New U.S. internet traffic rules cleared a hurdle on Thursday, surviving an attempt by the Senate to block them from taking effect later in the month. President Barack Obama's fellow Democrats in the Senate blocked a Republican-backed resolution to disapprove of the Federal Communication Commission's rules on net neutrality. The vote was 52-46 against the resolution. Adopted by a divided FCC last December, the rules forbid broadband providers from blocking legal content while leaving flexibility for providers to manage their networks. The rules still face a court challenge. Lawsuits by Verizon Communications, Inc. and others have been consolidated before the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia Circuit. The Senate resolution was championed by Kay Bailey Hutchinson, the top Republican on the Senate Commerce Committee, and had 42 co-sponsors, all Republicans. A similar measure passed the Republican-led House of Representatives in April. Regulations to mandate the neutrality of the Internet in terms of content, sites, platforms, and types of equipment that may be attached have been the subject of fierce debate over the last 10 years. The dispute pits content providers who seek protection against the blocking and degrading of their services against Internet service providers who often supply rival content and fear their networks could be overwhelmed. The FCC's rules allow consumers and entrepreneurs to utilize the Internet without having to ask permission from their broadband provider, Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller, chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, said on Wednesday. Backers of net neutrality say big providers could otherwise use their gatekeeper role to discriminate against competitors. But Republicans said the rules were an unprecedented power grab by the FCC. Hutchinson said the rules were yet another example of the Obama administration's relentless imposition of new and destructive regulations that are freezing our economy. The FCC rules are scheduled to go into effect on November 20th. Basically, the idea behind net neutrality is this. If you want to do something on the Internet, you cannot be arbitrarily blocked by your Internet provider because they may provide a similar service. So if you wanted to, if you were Time Warner, because you provide your own video entertainment, you could elect to block YouTube.
Right.
Because you didn't want the competition. Net neutrality says you cannot do that. So anyway, that's a net neutrality in a nutshell. And our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is this. The Senate upheld net neutrality, and your choices are, oh, thank heaven, I hate net neutrality, and I couldn't be bothered to find out how that affects my life. So far, we have had 25 votes, and most of you said, oh, thank heavens. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this. So if you check the yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it'll take you to another great, great website where you will be able to give your opinion. The question is, how do you feel about net neutrality? And please be polite. And, of course, that's our question to you. So please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Exactly. I'm actually very proud of the United States Senate for upholding net neutrality. I think it's a requirement in this day and age of the internet. I think it would be kind of a terrible thing to discover that somebody has blocked something just arbitrarily because they don't want the competition. And America's all about competition.
Well, and so much of the high-speed internet that you're going to get at your house is from a company that has their fingers in a lot of pies. They have the internet service that they offer. They often are bundling that with, you know, two other services, your telephone and whatever video entertainment you happen to get through cable or satellite service. And I can't think of another good place where you're going to get high-speed internet with relatively low latency unless you're getting it from one of these places. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say it's something that just absolutely positively has to be done.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's, you know, this nation was built on the concept of a free market, and the way you keep a market free is by making sure that it is free for everyone equally. Equality is what we were based on, and
sure.
And
well,
I'm
yeah,
all for it.
Business
level
is, you know, playing field.
A risky game, but every game has to have some kind of rule structure associated with it to make it useful for everybody involved.
Right. I have friends who are always talking about a free market and how you can't get in the way of a free market. The problem is, in many ways, the market isn't free, and this is just an attempt to make it a little freer. So I'm all for it, frankly. I'm all for it. Yeah, no, we see that here. I can't, for example, get to Facebook or whatever, but this is a school. You know, it is what it is, and it's a school that we happen to be using their internet connectivity. God bless them for letting us do that. And so...
Right, and even though they're taxpayer-funded, they have a role to play in the community where you expect them to be helping to educate your children.
Right.
And
I don't have a problem with them.
And
doing that.
And even though YouTube can be an instructional service for lots of things, it has been focused. The district is focusing your students towards learning things that are on the curriculum, and it's difficult to focus YouTube in any other way right now. And perhaps that'll change in the future, but until then, blocking it is the most productive way they know how to deal with it.
Yep. And I understand. I do understand that. I mean, this is an educational place. And they're really, you know, the sad part is that it doesn't do any good because every kid's got a phone now and every phone has Facebook. So it doesn't much matter, frankly. And you know, we're going to see, I think we're going to see more competition in that, in the phone arena. Certainly the folks at Google are starting to do that. We talked about that last week, and I'm kind of interested in that. I keep complaining to my friends at Google that they apparently are not high up enough in the organization to have gotten Rochester to be the pilot city. But okay, you live with what you live with, and that's how it works.
Yeah, we're lucky in a lot of cases. We have a lot of great cell phone coverage in general. We have. Let's see. Do we have fiber to the home yet?
No, do not. Fios will not be around.
Sore subject.
Nick keeps pining for that.
Yeah, I want fiber to my home. I want my Fios.
Yeah, last I heard, they've got it in Syracuse, but
yes,
not here yet.
Yes, nor will they, as near as we can tell. Hmm. But
other than that, you know, we have a lot of things going for us. We have a very highly educated workforce here. We have top-notch secondary education and post-secondary education available in town. Outstanding medical services with all the local hospitals.
And our job market is on the rise, actually.
Yeah, and a lot of places can't say that.
Well, with the U of R constantly expanding.
Well, even though we've lost hundreds of thousands of jobs from Kodak and Xerox and places like that, Bausch and Lomb and all those, there have been a massive number of small entrepreneurial shops that have opened up and hired 5, 10, 15 people apiece. And in fact, the net number of people being employed in Rochester is going up. And so, you know, this has always been an entrepreneurial city. An amazing number of things were invented here. George Selden, who invented the automobile. The Jell-O folks were in this area.
Mustard.
Mustard, the machine gun.
Potato chips.
The potato chip.
And a gentleman that helped develop the circuitry for a CPU.
Yeah.
The plans and all that type of stuff. The interesting thing is folks haven't done it. I don't know if they're still doing it, but for a while, Mount Hope Cemetery was doing different, you know, walkthroughs.
Mm. Yeah.
And they'd have famous people, inventors.
Okay.
And, I mean, they just... And there's, they were saying there's more people buried in Mount Hope Cemetery that actually live within the city limits.
Yep. Francis Marcellus Church is buried there. He's the guy who wrote, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus."
I didn't know that.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, there's a lot of famous people.
The guy they think now may well be Jack the Ripper is buried in Mount Hope Cemetery.
Oh, one thing we should mention is we do not have the camera up.
I did mention that.
Yep, we hit that one.
I did mention that. And, of course, Joe Simon was born in Rochester.
Really?
Yes. He was one of the two guys who created Captain America.
I was not aware of that either.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All kinds of people come from Rochester. Just all massive numbers of people. All right, we're going to go to the phones, and our first caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. My question is, this holiday season, I'm thinking about buying a laptop, and I was wondering what your recommendation would be for the antivirus software to have installed on it.
AVG. AVG or Avast. Either one are fantastic.
The paid version or the free version?
Free version. Well, you should always try the free version first.
That's what I was going to
say. And if you like it, then please always pay for it. It's what encourages them to build more.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, AVG, that's what I will go with.
It is an excellent product, and now is the time to buy. I suspect there's when we start coming up in the post-Thanksgiving season, we'll see some really massive.
You know, they're starting to already leak out some of the Black Friday ads. If you go to bfads.net, I think it's bfads.net, and it's got a lot of the Black Friday ads. Some of them. But, you know, more and more folks are leaking them out.
And I think the other one was hello, golly, Ned. I'm just having a confusing time.
Another place I like to go is retailmenot.com.
One word of caution, though, when you're going for a laptop, make sure, you know, I mean, they'll tell you, you know, it's got this much memory. You want at least 6 gig of memory, go with the 64-bit version, and make sure that it has dedicated graphics, that it's not shared.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, they can say, oh, well, you got 6 gig of memory. Yeah, and if it's not dedicated graphics, some of that 6 gig is going to be eaten up by the video card.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll remember that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And also blackfriday.info, apparently.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome, sir.
Good luck
Saturday. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I was talking about that site, Retail Me Not. If you are doing any kind of shopping online and you're looking for a coupon code that you might want to apply to something you're about to buy, Retail Me Not, you can go right there. They've got a field right on the homepage. You type in the place where you're shopping, and they'll come back with the coupon codes for that particular site. And some of them might apply to what you're buying, and then you just put in the coupon code and give it a try. I see Dave writing it down right now.
Yeah, well, I'm out. Like I was telling Nick, I've never done this in my life. And a friend of mine, she just called me and said, you know, well, here, you can go here and there because I need a washer and a dryer.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking, and I have to have stackable because of my house. It was built in 1928. I did have enough foresight that when I built this room upstairs when I was remodeling and all, because there's no room downstairs, that's where the shop is. I moved the washer and dryer up to the second floor.
Right. That's going to save you a lot of time hauling laundry.
Oh, it does. You know, and I mean, but I made the room big enough because I had, you know, just an apartment-sized washer dryer stackable. But I made the door wide enough, the room big enough that I could put in a standard washer and dryer. So that is my mission for this year on Black Friday if I have to.
Yeah, right.
Go out there and...
Well, check all these other things out first. You may not have to go.
I don't know if I'm going to go 4 a.m.
We talked about doing that. We do have my house was built sometime before 1900.
Your home is gorgeous.
Thank you. I love my home. Oh. But what's cool about it is there's actually
everything.
A laundry chute.
Ah.
And in the stairway that leads to the servants' quarters. There's actually a back stairwell that doesn't impinge on the rest of the house, so you know you didn't have to see the servants as they were going up to their quarters in the attic.
Interesting.
Well, that's an era that I don't know that I would have wanted to live in. But I think there's a laundry chute, so we really only have to trudge up. Of course, that's against gravity, so that's actually harder.
It's a workout plan.
I think my house had laundry chute in it. At least downstairs, I can see it. That's where it looks like the old-fashioned milk box door.
Sure.
You know, I redid all that, cleaned up the hardware and all that, and I blocked it off because it goes up to the roof, and I didn't want to heat. So I blocked it all off, and I put little shelves in there, and the grandkids, Lori used to always put other stuff for the kids in there.
Yep.
The Uno cards and all that stuff. They'd know where to go, and bam.
We also have a dumbwaiter in the pantry.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah, it goes down to this is one of the things I love about my house. There used to be, there are two kitchens. There's the standard kitchen on the first floor.
Right.
But there was the working kitchen in the basement, because in the summer, you didn't want to cook upstairs. So you cooked in the basement. And, of course, when you had the big parties that, you know, the owner of the house would have, you would do a lot of the cooking down there as well, and there was a dumbwaiter that you could move stuff up with. And when we first moved in and we took out the old carpet, there's a hole in the floor at one end of the room, and I realized there would be a bell there, a foot pedal.
Oh, right.
For the master or mistress of the house to press the buzzer to get the servants to come out with the food or whatever.
Huh.
It's just a very cool house.
It's a time machine.
Yeah, it really is. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with David Worcester, Dennis Worcester.
Yep.
I have no idea who. Do you have a brother? Cousin? Something?
I do have a brother.
And me, Nick Francesco. It is 18 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
No.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we've apparently traded David Worcester for Dennis Worcester, and we're going to keep him for the rest of the show.
You know, my brother does start with a D, too. So
there you go.
We'll say that.
But it's not David.
It's not. It's Don. Donald.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Welcome, Gerd. What's your question?
Well, you guys were talking about viruses and stuff. I'm using Internet Security 2011 Norton, which I paid for. I don't need AVG or anything, do I?
No.
If he's just got the internet security, you still got to have an antivirus.
Right. That's right.
That just protects you for the internet. If any viruses, you also need an antivirus program.
And a lot of folks get... The box it says it protects against viruses, spyware, worms, phishing.
Yeah.
So you get the whole package.
If you've got the full suite, then you do not really need anything else.
You're good.
You've got the full spectrum of coverage.
Okay, thanks. Just wondered.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Gerd.
Bye.
Good to check. Better to check than not.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree with that. Hey, here's an actual Apple news story.
Okay.
On Thursday, Apple issued iOS 5.0.1, an incremental upgrade for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch.
Yep.
That addresses a well-publicized bug that resulted in shorter battery life. The update is now available to all users through iTunes and will be also made available for download as an over-the-air update. In addition to addressing battery life issues, it also brings new multi-touch gestures for multitasking to the first-generation iPad. A full list of fixes in iOS 5.01, according to Apple, it fixes bugs affecting battery life, adds multitasking gestures to the original iPad, resolves bugs with documents in the cloud, and improves voice recognition for Australian users using dictation. Big problem
finally.
With Siri.
Yeah, finally. That's not a knife. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
They ask for a beer and
right.
Who knows?
Apple provided its developer community with two betas of iOS 5.0.1, and both were released in rapid succession last week, just 2 days apart. The last build, released last Friday, was known as 9A404. The company worked quickly to address battery life concerns that were expressed by existing iPhone users who upgraded to iOS 5, as well as customers who bought the new iPhone 4S hardware. Apple publicly said the battery life bugs affected only a very small number of users. Small being a relative term when you're looking at the number of devices that Apple has sold. It's still in the many millions. In addition to the features listed above, pre-release builds of iOS 5 listed two more developer-centric updates available with the new version of the mobile operating system. They included security improvements as well as a new way for developers to specify files that should remain on a device, even in low storage situations. Prior to issuing the iOS 5.0.1 update, Apple employees were actively working with some customers to diagnose the battery-related bugs as it worked on a fix. Some users were asked to install temporary diagnostic software on their iPhone so Apple could track their usage. So our question to you, have you downloaded the update? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I felt bad for my Australian friends who really could not use Siri at all.
Really?
I mean, at all. Of course, there's a whole other thing going on that I'm seeing in the classes that I teach.
What's that?
Well, my students are actually very polite. They don't use their phones much during class.
Okay.
I say much. Not that they don't use them. They don't use them much. But before class and after class, you get that distinctive Siri ping.
Right.
And what we're finding is there's always somebody else in the room who will then shout out, "Call home!" Or,
right,
you know, something else. And it's actually pretty funny to watch.
Yeah, Siri's great. 5.0.1 was the first update that Apple pushed out over the air, which was a new thing. So you actually go and check software updates on the device itself. And this is brand new. Every other update we've ever had to do on iOS devices has been what they call tethered. You'd have to connect a cable to your device, download it through iTunes, let it move off to the machine, let the machine restart. But this new one, you pull it down right on the device. Even if you're in the middle of an app or in the middle of a game and it's about to restart, it will restart the machine and then take you back to the point in the game where you were.
It's terrific.
Actually pretty well done.
It's one of the things that people have most complained about the iPad. You are tethered to a computer.
Right. Yeah, ever since iOS 5, you don't have to have a computer in order to make use of it. So if you were thinking about getting one for somebody who doesn't have a computer, this is an excellent, what I'll call a starter device, to let you get your email, surf the web, and as long as they've got Wi-Fi, or if you get the 3G model, it's a fantastic unit. And the fact that you don't have to break open the box and set it up the night before on your computer so that you can give it to them is even better.
That's
so.
The big thing.
Yeah, I'm getting
well,
a number.
Well, if you get them, if they still have 4, that first time you've still got to do the update to 5.
Yeah, anything you're getting from the Apple Store or getting shipped to you by now has probably got 5 on it.
Maybe. We just ordered a bunch for work, and they could not promise they'd come with 5.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, although I'm getting a lot of folks requesting the Droid tablets.
Okay.
Android tablets. See, suggested that maybe we do up a list of recommendations for the Androids.
We've got a couple of other news stories that I'll be getting to.
Okay, super.
In the meantime, however, we've got Vic from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Vic. What's your question?
Can I ask two questions?
Maybe.
Maybe, okay. Well, this week I had a virus in the computer.
Yeah, I don't like that question. What's the other one? No, go ahead.
It's all leading in. And it was removed. Now, I'm using a Vast Internet, the suite. And is
good
there
suite.
An antivirus program that's like the best or that has more success? I'm getting paranoid about this Avast because I got the virus. And the second question is, I'm not sure if it's related, but my Microsoft Office and Business 2010 was not working. So what I was going to do was uninstall it and reinstall it. And I've tried 3 times with Revo uninstaller, and it says it did not uninstall successfully. So I'm at a loss.
Well, the thing about the virus is there were. Do you happen to know the name of the one you got hit by?
No, that I don't.
Yeah, see, there's a new one out that's hitting everything. It doesn't matter what you've got. A lot of people are getting it, and we're finding that it's a little tough to get rid of. But it's so brand new that until the next update comes out, and I do know for a fact that people like Avast are working hard to figure out the best way to block it. But it's a brand new one, and nothing seems to stop it. I've seen machines with McAfee. I've seen machines with Norton, Avast, AVG, and if they get hit, they get hit. And it's coming through ads. It seems at least to be coming through ads that you find on any website, so you don't even have to do anything bad, you know. So it may not be necessarily that Avast is a bad guy in this. But you, as always, you have to make sure that you are running the latest version, both of the engine and of the definitions. So we like Avast, we like AVG, both. The reality is that nothing is 100% and never will be. There's just no guarantee of that.
Yeah, it's because, a big cat and mouse game.
Right. Right. So it's a game of leapfrog.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. My favorite phrase.
Yeah. In terms of Microsoft Office not being uninstallable, what error message do you get?
It just says Microsoft Office Home and Business 2010 uninstalled, did not complete successfully. And I've used Revo Uninstall. I tried three times.
One of the problems that you may have is you may be running that, what do they call the thing that comes in right at the very beginning?
The trial?
It's in the background. No. When you first boot the thing, there's a little piece of Office that comes in and sits in the background. And if that's still running, and what do they call it? Office. It's
some
not
kind
the
of
office,
TSR. That...
Yeah, it's not the Office Manager. The Office Startup, maybe, is what it's called. At any rate, that may still be running in the background. That keeps certain files open and loaded. And the point behind that is that it makes Windows, it makes Office load faster because it's already preloaded a bunch of stuff. Yeah, Office Quick Start. Thank you, Archandra in the... In the IRC chat says Office Quick Start, and if that's running, then there are some DLLs that have been opened and are in memory and therefore cannot be removed. So you not only have to uninstall Office, you also have to stop. Before you do that, you have to stop the Office Quick Start. Quick Start? It still doesn't sound quite right, but it's something along that line. In order to fully unload it, unfortunately, the way most operating systems work is that if a file is open, it cannot be removed because it's in use. And the operating system is at least smart enough, every operating system is smart enough to understand that if something's open and in use, we really just can't dump it.
Right.
So, yeah, my suggestion is that you make sure that Office Quick Start, and you can usually see it down in the lower right corner in the icon bar.
Okay. Now, is that in the uninstaller program or in the program itself?
It's down in the system tray.
It's down in the system tray, down in the
next
down in the lower
clock.
Right. There's often a round button with a left facing arrow in it. If you click on that, it slides off to the left, and you see a whole lot more icons that are normally hidden, and one of those should be the Office Quick Starter.
Okay, I'll try to. I don't see it at this point, but who knows?
The other thing you can do is take a look in the task manager. For heaven's sake, don't shut down anything you don't understand. But if something comes up and says "Quick Start," Office Quick Start, any Office anything,
yep,
shut it down.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right,
excellent. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks, Vic.
Goodbye.
It's one of the small problems with any operating system. It's,
mm-hmm.
The good news is they're kind of smart enough to not remove something you're actively running.
Right.
You can force them to, but it's not easy. But it's good to know that they'll at least try to protect you at least a little bit.
Right. I had a situation at my house on my home machine where there was an antivirus app that I was using, and I was ready to uninstall it. And I followed the directions, and there was a component of it that tells the antivirus software to fire up when you start up your machine. And it was dutifully trying to do that, but it couldn't find the app because I'd already uninstalled it. So the little trigger program was firing every 10 seconds trying to do that, and it was slowing down my machine day to day.
I bet.
And it was something that even when I tried to uninstall and install and then re-uninstall.
Right.
It still wouldn't come out, and it turned out I had to go in manually and pull it out. And I sent them an email, and I said,
"Hey,
it was."
Going
but
every
my
line.
Machine's been pretty perky since, so I can't.
There you
complain
go.
About that. So I was happy I nailed it.
But yeah, and it is tough. Often, what you really need to do is restart in safe mode.
Right.
make sure everything is gone, and then from there you can do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it is. It's not easy. It's not easy to make sure everything is turned off. The problem is that these machines were designed and built by geeks. The software was. And so consequently, you often get something that is blindingly obvious to the person who wrote it, and everybody else is like, meh?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's one of the things that I also don't like about any of the tablets, and iOS 5 and Android. There are things that are hidden from you. And the theory is you shouldn't need to know them, and I really do get that.
And most people don't.
But when something goes wrong, I'd like to be able to get to it.
Right.
You know, an error message that says something has gone wrong and the only button is okay. You know what? It's not okay.
Well, that's the way I always felt. I remember way back in college when I'd take a programming course, and they'd say, oh, well, you write your program, and then you load in something called a library, which is code that some other person has made in the past that you are building on top of. And I said, okay, so how do I go and look at the library and see what's going on? Oh, well, you never need to do that. It's,
yeah, right.
It's fine. I said, well, okay, until my stuff starts breaking and I need to know how it works. You know, it's one thing to build something, but if you have to troubleshoot it too, you need to understand not only the theory of how it works, but actually how it is currently working or not working.
Right.
We see that nowadays. I used to do that with Forth. You build some code and it becomes a black box. But I built that black box. I know what's in it. I know, you know, how it works. Nowadays, you can program it, for example, in languages like Ruby and use gems, or you can download functions for PHP or whatever. And unless you actually tear them apart, you don't know what's going on underneath that hood.
Yeah, there's a lot of trust involved there.
Yep. And, well, right. There's trust in terms of are they capturing my data. There's also trust that was it any good? Was that programmer worth his or her salt? You know?
Sure. Yep.
So,
That's a challenge.
It's a challenge. And I used to do the same thing, you know, when that's why I love open source. I've used it back from my Forth days on up. If you have the opportunity to look at the source code, whether you do or not, if you have the opportunity to, I feel safer because I feel that, you know, at some point I will actually be able to do that if I need to. If something's not working right, I can go take a look at the code and see how it works.
Yep, and there are many eyes on it, and many eyes to shine light in all the dark corners and figure out, oh, are we susceptible to this type of problem?
And even if I don't look at it, I know there's 100,000 other people who did.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yep, and there's, I can think of the Firefox folks that have their open source component.
Yep.
So that when a new version comes out and I complain and write a hopefully well-formed bug report, that they'll be able to work backwards and figure out, okay, well, which part does this affect and figure out what's going on. And in many cases, they have. In my particular environment, we've got things that have to be just so. And when they're not, I make a big stink about it, and I give them lots of information.
Yep.
And they take care of it.
Yeah, back in the
fast
day. Yeah.
Compared to, you know, a company that might take 6 or 8 months to release something, you know, they'll have something out in a week or two.
Back in the day, I'll tell the story when we come back.
Okay.
It involves WordStar, which was, of course, closed source, but it may well be, in all my many, many decades of doing this, it may be my best customer service experience. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco. It is 38 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the truly magnificent, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
All All right, I'm afraid we have to do the show now. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwin.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we're just rocking out on sound bites.
I just realized his daughter can't hear the music we're playing. Wondering, what the hell are they listening to?
We're all bopping our heads. And
just, what are they doing?
We have Vic from Irondequoy back on the line, probably to berate us about something. What's up, Vic?
No berating.
All right.
I disabled Office Quick Start, like you said, and I got to the fourth step on Revo Uninstaller. Now I'm at the point where it says found leftover registry items. But it found 26,359.
Mm-hmm.
Do I delete them? Or?
Yes. Delete all.
Delete them all. Okay, that's what I was worried about.
No, nope. Get rid of them. It'll keep the registry nice and clean, and that's ultimately what you want, is because Windows doesn't do a good job when you say uninstall.
Mm-hmm.
In the registry, it just turns one bit off, and it leads all those things through there. So, consequently, every time you install, uninstall a program, if you do it with the Microsoft Uninstaller, it just makes that register get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it doesn't need to.
It takes longer and longer to load, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. You know what? It deleted it.
Yes, it would.
It got rid of Microsoft Office.
There you go.
Wow. Great.
Don't look shocked. We gave... Wait a minute.
This is our thing.
You called us for advice, and then you're shocked when it works? Oh, Vic.
No. Vic. I'm just amazed that I did it myself.
Gee, it means that I'm doing something right for the past 20-some-odd years?
Well, we did one thing right sometime in
the past 20-some-odd years. No, we got another couple of calls.
We did?
Yeah.
See, we're...
We were on a roll for a while. They're, you know, months apart, but, you know...
That's all right. As long as we get one a year, I think we're out of the game.
We're good.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Vic. Yeah, he did. He did sound a little shocked there.
Yeah, but it's nice when something goes right.
Yes.
And somebody notices.
Yeah.
What do they say? That the hard thing about doing something right... I'm sorry. The trouble with doing something right the first time is that nobody knows how hard it was to do it.
Right.
That's the one I hear about.
And the minute you do something right, everybody asks you to do it again or do something else.
Right. Or they want you to do it every time.
The reward for a job well done is more jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Be careful what people know that you know how to do.
Boy, that is the truth. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is not there.
Uh-oh. The phones, the buttons are sticking. So I apologize, Joe. Please call back.
Please call back.
We'll
in the meantime,
here.
I'll read another...
What's going on in the news, Nick?
Well, this is interesting. The Amazon Kindle Fire is living up to its name by setting the tablet market on fire. Pre-orders of the as-yet-unreleased tablet have been phenomenal. The success of the Kindle Fire, however, puts Apple's Android tablets in general between a rock and a hard place. It should be great news. The Kindle Fire is expected by some to exceed demand for the Apple iPad this holiday season and could be the first tablet to put a dent in Apple's tablet dominance. There is finally a rival tablet that seems worthy of competing with the Apple iPad, and it is based on Android. Despite impressive hardware specs and grandiose claims, tablets like the HP TouchPad, BlackBerry Playbook, Motorola Zoom, which I really do like, and Samsung Galaxy Tab have ranged from utter failures to mediocre sales at best. My favorite, though, is the Asus Transformer.
Mm-hmm.
The Kindle Fire presents some problems for Android, though. For starters, it is not a pure Android tablet. The Kindle Fire is built on a proprietary Amazon tablet OS that's based on Android. It is a fork of the Android OS that is Android-ish. As time goes on and Google continues to develop Android in one direction while Amazon continues to take Kindle Fire down its own unique path, the two platforms will be less and less alike. At some point in the future, the main thing tying the Kindle Fire to Android may be the fact that they're both not iPads. The second problem facing Android from both the Kindle Fire and the recently unveiled Nook tablet. With the Kindle Fire selling for $200 and the Nook tablet coming in at $250, other Android tablet makers are forced to either justify or cut their prices. If you can get a Kindle Fire for $200, why would you spend $500 for an Android tablet or $600 for an iPad?
Right.
Ultimately, the Android ecosystem has to walk a fine line between claiming some small victory over the success of an Android-based tablet and differentiating media consumption tablets like the Kindle Fire from the full-featured tablets like Samsung's Galaxy Tab 10.1. While the other Android tablets still try to sell at prices on par with the iPad, Android needs to either distance itself from the Kindle Fire or present a solid argument for why anyone should spend more than twice as much for some other Android tablet. Android may be able to get away with claiming the Kindle Fire as one of its own for now, but any success of the Kindle Fire will be a testament to Amazon more than Android, and other Android tablets will have to struggle to compete against both the iPad and the Kindle Fire. So our question to you, planning on getting a Kindle Fire, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, go ahead.
I predict those Amazon tablets and the new Kindles that they've got are going to be fantastic sellers this holiday season.
Well,
they brought the price down so low that it's almost an impulse buy.
How do you not buy one? And this is to go back to what Dave was saying earlier about what's our recommendation on tablets. I want to see the Kindle Fire and the new Nook before I say anything.
Right.
But those look like awfully danged useful devices. I have a Nook Color. And as it stands, it's a great device. I can do my email. I can do web browsing. I can play Angry Birds. I can do. I can read books. And that's 90% of what anybody does.
I love how playing Angry Birds is like the new Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
That's how you tell whether something's a legitimate product is, can I play Angry Birds on this?
Well, exactly. The thing that is supposed to go, well, wait a minute, and the battery life is longer.
The battery life is longer and everything
I
else.
I mean, you can put a word processor on there, everything that you do on a laptop.
Yep.
It's thin, it's nice and, you know, compact. And, folks, well, you can even get keyboards if you want to plug those in. So, sure. You know, there's a lot of versatility. You know.
It all works out. In the meantime, we'll go to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, this week I was a little surprised. I had Firefox 7.0.1, and, as you get this pop-up, it says, yeah, a newer version is available. Security updates, all that good stuff. And I go, okay, go download it and run the setup. And oddly enough, after I did that, okay, it says it's updated. But then I go into my email and I click on a link for the trouble ticket tracking system we have, and up pops Firefox. I'm going, huh, this is weird. It should be running Internet Explorer because the trouble ticket tracking won't run on anything but Internet Explorer. So come to find out, Firefox, without any warning whatsoever, no option to turn it on or off, automatically set itself as the default browser. I thought that was awfully curious.
Well, it's certainly rude.
Folks think.
Yeah, it's certainly rude.
And that's the first time I've heard about it not being asked. In fact, it's always asking, no matter what browser I install, you know, hey, would you mind if I'm the default? But now, this is the first time I'm hearing it. This is Firefox 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, 8.0.
Amazing.
And I carefully went through the custom install because I want to make sure it goes into the correct directories and like that. I think it was a good standard that was put forth that you have program files, vendor, product. And for whatever reason, the Mozilla Foundation doesn't like to do that. They just go Mozilla space Firefox. Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing. No more spaces than between program and files in directory or file names. I hate that. So it likes to put it in like Mozilla Firefox. No, I want it in mozilla.org/Firefox. But, yeah, I went through carefully the options, and I didn't see any box I could untick that said, make this my default browser.
Yeah, I haven't played enough with it yet to tell you, and it may not be there. That would be kind of rude, I would think.
I can tell you that for sure on the Mac version, it doesn't do that, and I grabbed version 8 earlier this week, and I've still got Chrome, thankfully, as my default. So
it may just
okay,
be...
Oh, okay, yeah, well, this was on Windows XP, just to be fair to describe it.
Okay.
Right. Interesting. I'll check that out, Joe. Thanks. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know what to tell you, but I'll check it out.
Good to talk to you, folks.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Bye, Joe.
Yeah, that's a little rude.
Yeah,
the real question, of course, is did Joe blow past the
maybe
thing while he was installing it?
Or he
that happened,
or,
but
the phone rang, or the dog barked, or
right. But it's very possible that that's the way it happened, and if it did, that's not so great.
Yeah, that would be it. It's almost notable just because the potential might be there for that because it's very uncommon. Web browsers in general knew that they would get a black eye if they tried to horn in on becoming the default.
Well, you know, then again, the Firefox people may have just missed it. They just never thought about it. How often would anybody at Firefox, at Mozilla, be running anything but Firefox?
Maybe.
You know? And so they just didn't notice it. I mean, I can't fault Joe for anything until I've looked at it myself. It could have happened anyway at all. But I believe Joe's a pretty savvy guy, so I can't say yay or nay on that. Anyway, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Walworth, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yes, thank you. I have a question regarding port forwarding and IP cameras.
Okay,
I have several cameras, and I can only access two of them from the Internet. When I set them up on port 80 and 81, I can't access 82, 83, or 84. I've set up port forwarding on my router, but it just doesn't seem to work. I can access all the cameras from within inside my network, but outside I can't. I tried a couple other numbers, 5,000, and I also have a robot on 8080, and that seems to work. What numbers should I try, or what might be wrong here, or is there a limit? I couldn't find a limit anywhere in my router documentation. It's linked.
There is a limit to the number of ports you can have. That limit is 65,586. but there is a limit. The big thing is what ports are open on your firewall.
Right.
And that's probably where your problem lies right now. Generally speaking, 8081, 8080, 8081, and a few others are open by default, and all the rest are closed off. So if you're going to put something on one of those ports, you have to then open that port in your firewall. And I don't know whether you've got a hardware firewall or a software firewall, but if you have both, you may have to open it in both.
Hardware firewall in the router, and I did go to the, there's a port forwarding table, and
right.
I did go to that, and I entered in 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, and only 80 and 81 come through.
Right, because port forwarding is not port blocking. They're two different things. You have to do both. You have to unblock the port and forward it.
Oh, okay. So somewhere there's another setting then in my router somewhere where it's being blocked?
It depends on the router. Is it what model, what make and model is your...
It's a Linksys WRT54G.
All right. That's a very common flavor of router. In that particular one, I believe there's a port forwarding setting, and I don't think that there's a blocking on that one. I think all you have to do is forward it. The place I would go just to... What you need to do is from the outside world, be able to tell what ports does the outside world think are open. And
well, the only ports, I went to a webpage on grc.com.
That was the one I was thinking of, yep.
The only ports that I've opened up a lot of ports, but the only one that page shows that open are 80 and 81.
Yep, and so the rest of them are blocked.
Yep.
And who's your ISP?
Time Warner.
Okay. Usually they don't block these kinds of things.
Yeah, they're probably not blocking it, but...
You might try... take 80 and 81 off on those line items where you've got them set up, and put in 82 and 83. Save your changes. Potentially even restart the router. And
do a GRC
test again and see if that changes.
Yeah. One of the things is that there is a... Man, I don't know where to tell you to go find in the manual, but I do know that in the manual it will tell you how to unblock or block. Well, it tells you how to block ports, and if you just do it backwards, you're unblocking them.
I think it's just a checkbox.
Yeah, I got PDFs, and I did a search on blocking, and I couldn't find anything, and I went through the, you know, calling it up as a web page.
Do a Google search.
Yeah, I did, and it goes through the same procedure that I go through for port forwarding.
Okay.
Right. I'd look in advanced configuration.
Okay.
Settings, you know, there's a bunch of things that you can do in there. And I don't know if they call it blocking or filtering.
I could. I haven't done it, but I have set up DMZ before. And
well, that's more data. Well, that'll work, but it's 601, really. You can do it that way. But I would suggest you look at port. I think under Linksys they call it filtering.
Mm-hmm. Oh, filtering. Okay.
So look for port filtering or port, I guess nobody says unfiltering. So look for port filtering.
All right. My last question is, are the newer routers any better? I've been looking at, you know, upgrading to maybe a Linksys E4200. Would that be better for this kind of thing? More settings or something?
I have a Cisco branded router which I completely love. It gives me every control I need.
Yeah. I've got a couple of clients with the E1000 series.
Mm-hmm.
They are the lower end in their router line. And I think some of the higher end, like the 3500 series,
are a good one. I've got a 3000 series, yeah.
I would shoot for something in the middle or the upper end of the range of the Linksys.
Okay. Stuff. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you. We are going to take another break. And this is going to be a slightly longer break. Because it is the top of the hour, you have wasted an entire hour of your life with us. You'll never get that hour back, but if you're the kind of masochist I think you are, we're going to give you another chance to waste another hour back on the other side of these important messages. When we come back, we will have a whole lot more interesting news. We will have Dave Enright. We will have Dennis Worcester, who is ably sitting in for Steve Ray, who is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. And you'll have me, Nick Francesco, and we collectively are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we want to once again thank all of our members and all of the people who became members during this last pledge drive. We want to thank all of you. And while I'm in a thanking mood, by the way, let me thank all our veterans for their service. And putting themselves in harm's way to make sure that I can sleep better at night. And I want to personally thank each and every one of you for your service. We're going to take a break while I stop being maudlin, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, I remind you that Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, and therefore we have no camera or Ustream feed today. But we did have a text message.
Right.
And the person asked, does the glass on the iPhone 4 break easier than on the 3G?
Right. The answer is not in my opinion. That being said, there is twice as much glass on the iPhone 4 because they have a glass front where you swipe it with your finger. But for aesthetic reasons, I guess, they put a glass back on it as well. So when you drop it, it's just as likely that it's going to land glass side down on either side.
Right.
So technically, I guess, it's not that it breaks easier. It's just that there's more glass to break.
Right, and even if it had Gorilla Glass, it doesn't matter. Gorilla Glass doesn't shatter, doesn't protect from shattering. It protects from scratches.
I keep hearing that Gorilla Glass.
It's great
phrase.
Stuff.
That's out of Corning, right?
It's out of Corning, New York. It's on a lot of phones. I have it on this phone. You can actually scrape a key across my phone, and it won't. I'm not going to let you try it, but it won't be a problem. I don't know if it's going to come on my next phone. I'm looking at the Nexus. The Samsung Galaxy Nexus.
Right. Didn't they just release a second revision of that?
That's coming out sometime around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I'm due for a new phone on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th.
Okay.
So I'm really looking at that. The one that's just come out is the Motorola Razr, which does have Gorilla Glass.
I love how they brought that name back.
Yeah. It's a great phone, but I also want to look at the Samsung before I make my decision. One thing is the Samsung theoretically is going to have plain vanilla Android as opposed to the Moto Blur and all the stuff that adds to it.
Yeah,
which might, I prefer the.
That's the problem is that the carriers they want to differentiate the phone because they're essentially getting the same phone as everybody else.
Right,
mm-hmm. And they want to make it useful and differentiate it, and they put a bunch of junk on it. And sometimes you can't even get rid of it, even if you want to.
No, you can't.
Yeah. And AT&T just announced that they got now fully rolled out as the 4G network.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. That's good for you. Yep. I'm still a Verizon guy. As long as I have unlimited data, I will be a Verizon guy.
Nothing wrong with that. But I have the, I pay for 2 gig.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. I've never, ever hit that.
because right. I find more spots that I can go in and say Wi-Fi.
Right, and that's the big thing. If you keep both your Wi-Fi and your 4G running, it will usually, and not always, but usually prefer wireless to 4G, and so you don't have as much of a problem.
Yeah, my iPad's like that, too.
Yeah, what's interesting is Verizon just changed their data plans.
Oh.
So whatever you're paying for, you now get double. So if you're paying for 2G, it's the same price, but you get 4G. If you're paying for 5 gig, rather, not
Gig,
it's the same price, but you get 10 gig, and if you're paying for 10, it's the same price, but you get 20 gig. So that was nice of them, and really, Verizon has astonishing coverage here in Rochester, mainly because they bought all the towers from Frontier and then instantly doubled the number of towers that they had. It's hard not to get a Verizon signal in Rochester, although I manage it in this building very nicely.
Yeah, yeah. No, my AT&T, I've got a bar and a half here at the studio.
Yeah, I actually have no bars here in the studio. On the other hand, it's time for me to get a new phone anyway, mainly because, I now only get about an 80% charge on my battery.
Okay.
But I've got a month before I buy a new phone, so I'm not going to get crazy about it. I'm not going to worry about it. All right, we're going to reach out now and crank up the electricity because we've got a call coming in all the way from Julie in Largo, Florida. Are you actually in Largo, Florida at this moment?
I am actually in Largo, Florida at this moment.
And is it beautiful there?
It is absolutely. Yesterday it was cold. Today it's like 76. Wait a minute.
Define cold.
We'll be back in
it was
the
cold. I think it hit 60.
What was cold yesterday?
What was the what?
How cold was it yesterday?
Yeah, define cold.
It was cold. I mean, I actually had to wear my old Rochester clothes.
What by cold you mean like 60?
Something like that.
Try 30 degrees. I was standing out
snowing
For the Patriot Guards yesterday on the flag line out there. 30 degrees. That's cold.
That's cold. But listen, Julie,
I've done like 50-some years of that weather.
See, Julie, I don't think we can trust you with this number, so we'll all be down later in the week.
Yep. No problem. I got one extra bedroom. You can all sleep together.
We'll stack ourselves up like cordwood if we have to. What can we do for you, Julie?
Well, I've got a bunch of stuff on my computer, all the stuff to protect it from viruses and the flu and whatever. And I'm thinking I might have a little too much. I'm using Zone Alarm, SpyBot, Search and Destroy, the Sea Cleaner, and I heard about Avast, and I don't know if I'm running all the right stuff or if I'm just running way too much.
Well, if those are what you're running, you're probably not running too much. Certainly, you want Zone Alarm. They all do different things. See, Avast is an antivirus program, and if you're running that, it protects your computer against the viruses.
I have Super Anti-Spyware.
That protects you against spyware and some viruses. SpyBot is another antivirus anti-spyware thing. Zone Alarm is a firewall. So you've really got different things running. Zone Alarm you should run all the time. Certainly Avast you should run all the time. The others you can run daily, weekly, whatever, to do a sweep of your system, but you don't necessarily need to be running them constantly.
All right, because I talked to my brother, who seems to think he's Mr. Computer up there. And he told me, to get rid of this and go to MS Security Essentials, Malware, Revo Uninstaller, and Ghostry.com. I never heard of any of them.
Well, the Windows product is pretty good. It does firewall, antivirus, and a little bit of spyware. Revo Uninstaller is terrific if you are uninstalling software, but that's actually all it does.
Oh, okay.
So it's not going to protect you against viruses or any of that other stuff.
And Do you have a router in the house?
Yes. Well, I have my laptop. Isn't that what you use a router for?
Yeah.
Well, yes. But do you plug that laptop right into your cable modem or your DSL modem, or do you have... What?
Yes, it's right, yeah.
Okay.
then you probably want to keep zone alarm running.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because depending on how you do it, I mean...
Right, right, but she isn't, so she needs zone alarm. But really, you need an antivirus program, you need a firewall, and the other things you need to run regularly, but they don't have to be running all the time in the background. So if your laptop is fast enough, you're not going to notice any of it anyway.
My laptop's terrible with speed. My main computer is great. That I have Windows.
You just might have a lot of stuff starting.
And my laptop has a Vista, which
forever
to boot up. And,
You may be running too much stuff. You might want to not run SpyBot all the time. You might not want to run CCleaner all the time. If they have options to set them up to run constantly in the background, turn that off. You really only need to run your antivirus program, like Avast or AVG or whatever, all the time, and your zone alarm all the time. Everything else you can run intermittently, like a Saturday afternoon when you're sitting there having your feet massaged and eating bonbons. You can run that.
Having my margarita.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Hey, tell you what.
Enjoy.
Julie, do us one favor.
What?
Tell your friends down there. Tell them, you want that program down, be broadcast down there.
Oh, I do. I tell them all about it on the computer when we're sitting out at the pool.
Cool.
See, and I tell them about Otto with his Frank Sinatra shows, too.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we've got a great variety here at member-supported Jazz 90.1 of music. You know, the folks that there say jazz. No, there's a lot more. I mean, the polka show,
and how do you
German show.
Jazz?
Yeah,
I learned German on the German show.
There you
I
go.
I speak German. Now I do a little bit.
There you go.
See?
We're not just entertainment. We're education.
That's right.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Thank you very much.
The only German I actually know that I can say on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Warum bist du morgen gesund, which apparently means why are you healthy
why
tomorrow?
Why are you healthy tomorrow? Yeah.
Okay,
all right, thanks,
all I
Julie.
Know is like nine.
Nine.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
Thanks, Julie. Largo, Florida. Mm-hmm. Had she called in about another month, I'd have gone down to fix her computer myself.
I'll wait until January.
That's what I'm saying. January, February. Yeah, exactly.
When the snow really hits. I mean, quite often we don't get snow until we're usually having green Christmases lately.
Yeah, that's the truth. All right, Barnes & Noble, we've already done Kindle. Barnes & Noble on Monday unveiled an update to its Nook line, adding the 7-inch Nook tablet. The $249 device hit the stores and was delivered to customers' homes starting yesterday. The device will also be eventually released at retail stores like Best Buy, Staples, Walmart, Target, Office Max, Radio Shack, and more. Barnes & Noble also dropped the price of the Nook Color from $249 to $199 and promised a huge update with over 100 enhancements. That's the thing I'm waiting for. The Nook Simple Touch, meanwhile, is available for $99, down from $139. The device now has a new and improved e-ink display, which includes 25% faster page turns. The company said Simple Touch users can expect 2 months of reading on a single charge. The Nook tablet is our lightest, fastest tablet with HD entertainment, Barnes & Noble CEO William Lynch said in a New York press event. It's hands down the best media tablet in the 7-inch class. The Nook tablet runs Android Gingerbread, but does not connect to the Android market. It features a 1 GHz Ti OMAP 4 dual-core processor, for all you geeks out there. It includes 1 GB of built-in. You know you're a geek when I say 1 GHz Ti OMAP 4 dual-core processor, and you hear?
Ooh.
Got a gig of built-in RAM, making the device super responsive for reading, streaming, movies, and more, Lynch said. It includes 16 GB of storage, which is expandable up to 32 GB. Data can also be stored via the Nook Cloud. The Nook tablet is Wi-Fi enabled, and buyers get free access in Barnes & Noble stores and via AT&T's 26,000 nationwide hotspots. Nook tablet is a powerful HD entertainment machine that's under a pound and slips easily into a pocket or purse, Lynch said. He touted the tablet's extraordinary or revolutionary battery life, which provides up to 9 hours of video or 5 full-length HD movies on a single charge and 11.5 hours of reading. Lynch said Nook tablet includes deep integration with Netflix. Movie recommendations will be pushed directly to the home screen. There will also be access to Pandora as well as Nook Kids and Nook Newsstand. The Nook tablet will go head-to-head with the Amazon Kindle Fire, but Lynch insisted the Nook tablet is the superior device. The Nook has a better display because Barnes & Noble invested in the first fully laminated display without an air gap. Amazon did not do that, Lynch said, and the difference in quality is clear. Does the Nook tablet sound like a winner to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
So you can put all the apps on this Nook.
Well, it doesn't connect to the Android market. It'll have its own market with its own set of apps. I'm sure it'll have all the popular ones. Yes, I'm sure it'll have Angry Birds. But you don't know yet.
The litmus test of tablets.
Well, I tell you, I have a Nook Color, and it is the original one. It is not the fastest tablet I've ever seen, but it is great. It does everything I ask it to do. It's only got about an 8-hour battery life, 8-9-hour battery life reading. Mm-hmm. And a shorter battery life, obviously, when you're watching movies.
Yeah.
But it's not the first device I go to watch movies. You know, I've got a big screen TV. Why would I not want to watch the movie there if I can?
Right.
But for something to carry around and have available and et cetera, it really is excellent. And I've been a fan of the 7-inch size. It's just, you know, I like the 10.5-inch side because I've got old eyes, and I completely admit that.
Right.
But that 7-inch tablet is exactly the right size, not too heavy to carry, easy to slip into a pocket. It actually works out very, very nicely for me personally.
It's probably a good size for thumb typing, too.
It's a great size for thumb typing. It is a great size for
because the 10-inch is a little
really
big.
Not good.
A little big for thumb typing. Good for touch typing with your fingers, sort of, but
yep.
It's tricky. The other thing I noticed is that you said it's got a laminated display compared to some of the other tablets have a separate digitizer on top of the display.
Right. Well, what they're saying is there's no air gap between the glass and the
right.
and the substrate. And what that means is that you don't get you don't have to tap as hard, and it's clearer. There's no mm-hmm. blur. There's even in these, there's the slightest, if you look really closely, there's the slightest blur, and they say that's gone in that. I haven't seen it yet.
Apple did that with their iPhone 4. They made the glass laminated right onto the display, and I know because I've got clients that drop theirs and call me and said, hey, Dennis, can you help me figure this out and figure out what to do? And I've been doing repairs for people, but when you go to the iPhone 4, the parts are so much more expensive because you can't buy just the glass. You got to get it with the display.
You got to get the whole thing together, absolutely. We're going to take a break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not. It's easy to get there. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 18 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, before we go back to the phones, I just want to say, those of you who are on Google Plus, we now have a page there for Soundbites.
Hey.
You can find the link at soundbites.org if you are on Google Plus. Please join the page. Put me in a circle. Put the show in a circle, and we'll be adding some stuff to there as well. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's your question?
Hello there, gentlemen. My question is to get an opinion about a Linux desktop environment and maybe some help. Nick, we heard you say a couple of weeks ago that you had the latest Ubuntu 11.10 and hated the Unity desktop.
Well, yes, and I do hate it, but it's not because it's a bad desktop. It's just because it is so very different, and I'm human like everybody else. Change is bad. Yeah, exactly. And I'm spending very little time getting used to it because I put it on a second machine that I could play with, and I just haven't had time to play. I've been too busy working. So I haven't had a lot of time to play in it. People who use it consistently say they love it. I just don't know, personally.
Well, we downloaded the live CD because we've been using the long-term service editions of Ubuntu, and so we're trying to prepare for this upcoming April. We downloaded the CD, tried Unity, and hated it because it's just, it's tough to get around. It took me a while to maneuver around and try to download LXDE desktop and XFCE desktop.
Right.
And we do like LXDE a lot.
Yeah, very nice.
The only problem I have with it is I can't we have some launchers. We have some Wine launchers on our current desktop in GNOME, and there's no way to put a launcher like we have on the GNOME desktop. So do you can you recommend any other desktop environments that might be a little more compatible, or do you know of a way we can do launchers with desktop? Again, your opinion,
well,
your thoughts.
Now, hold on. Did you say you're using which one?
Right now, on our computer, we are using the current, 10.04.
No, no, which GUI are you using?
GNOME.
GNOME.
Yeah.
Oh, you're using GNOME. All right.
Yeah.
And you want, and you're looking for launchers like you have in which other one?
Well, when we look to the future, we think we want to go with LXDE, but I've looked around and tried to play with LXDE to put a launcher for Wine programs. We have some, like, one of them is like a U.S. Government savings bond application. And so we can launch it. We have a launcher on there. We just click on it, up it comes. We don't have to enter the commands or anything like that. But on LXDE, they don't seem to have a means for you to put a launcher on the desktop.
Yeah,
is there something better, maybe?
Well, there is a program.
I wonder if they could do it, or
there is a program called LX Launcher.
Yeah, I saw that, but it seems to be for just like what Unity does. It's for some. I didn't explore it that far, but it doesn't seem to be able to add in Wine launchers to start a Wine program.
Oh, so that you can...
Yeah, right. It's almost like having Unity, like having on your desktop phone, on your phone, your mobile phone. You hit the icon, and boom, up comes something for games, or boom, you hit something else, and it goes to some other thing. It doesn't appear to be designed for you to install your own specific launcher.
Now, on the other hand, and I'm getting the same advice here from the folks in the IRC chat, XFCE has the ability to run GNOME startup programs.
Okay.
Basically, because it's also built on GTK, which is the underlying engine to GNOME, and so you can run pretty much any GTK thing on XFCE. So that, you know, if you like, I personally prefer XFCE. I use GNOME all the time, but certainly the difference between XFCE and LXDE. I prefer XFCE. And for all those of you out there who have no idea what the last 5 minutes has been about, under Windows and under the Macintosh, you have a single graphical user interface with which you are stuck. Under Linux, that is not true. You can change the graphical user interface. XFCE, LXDE, GNOME, KDE, and Unity are all different graphical user interfaces that you can use instead of what you would think of as Windows or as the Mac, which is really the Finder on Mac and is really the window front end and Windows. You can switch them around. You can, in fact, have multiple ones running and switch among them when you start up. So that's really nice. You can just use whatever you think is going to be more fun. What Walter is trying to do is to figure out, you know, you can create a shortcut on a desktop under Windows or on you can put stuff down in the button bar. Whatever it's called, the
dock,
dock
on the Mac,
the taskbar. Yeah, the dock on the Mac. On the Mac is the dock, and on Windows it's the taskbar. You can put a shortcut on the desktop, and you can do the same thing in GNOME. You can put stuff right on the desktop as a shortcut. And what Walter is essentially looking to do is to create shortcuts in LXDE or XFCE.
XFCE.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think that you can run the essentially GNOME launchers under XFCE.
Yeah. The only part we didn't like about, one of the things we didn't like about XFCE is that the panel with the menu and the quick launch and whatever is on the top. And once you try to move it down to the bottom, well, you're now competing with a second little panel
right. That's
on there. And I guess we can try to get rid of the small one, maybe try to run everything there. But the odd part is when you bring the panel down from the top, bring it down to the bottom, suddenly now you're still out with all of the other file and menu and go and everything else
right.
up there. It's a very strange, it's sort of like LXDE doesn't mesh well with what's underlying with Ubuntu on the desktop. It's almost like being another shell on top of their GNOME. At least that's what our experience was with the Live CD.
Right. That's one of the things I like more about XFCE.
Okay.
I have to admit it. And apparently, according to XFCE.org,
yes. You
can actually just do drag and drop to create launchers.
Oh, marvelous. Okay.
Now, I have not done that. I haven't done a lot of launchers. I tend to keep my desktop semi-pristine.
Yes.
semi-pristine. But apparently that's how you do it.
Okay, great. I'll explore now with XFCE.
There you go.
See it works. Okay, I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Well, there you go. That's
now I know how my clients feel.
That's exactly. there's a bunch of geekisms. I don't think there were four words that didn't include an acronym.
There's some alphabet
in
soup in there. Yeah.
Conversation.
Right. Somebody dropped
you
the Scrabble bag again.
What? All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style on a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yep. Okay, you know how they say, you know, people that, how to politely put it, they don't have a clue, can beat you down.
Yep.
Well, I had one of those come in. And hopefully you folks understand what I'm saying. As she brought in, it had to be six or seven of these different flyers.
Oh, yeah.
With all these computers. Well, I've got this one and this one and this one. Now, can you beat that price?
What, am I Walmart?
No.
Right.
And she goes, but you can do this and this. And then all of a sudden I start going to her and, you know, saying, well, look at, you know, it's only giving you this much memory. This, you know, things are watered down. And I says, you know, you want to do what with it? And, you know, her son also wants to play some games. And like we've said before, I go, no, that's not going to handle it. Yeah, but it's a good cheap price. And she kept going back to the price, but yet she wants a Cadillac and only wants to pay an economy car price. Because, you know, it's all the stuff she wants to do in that. And I says, yeah, my system can do it. Well, how much? And I tell her, yeah, but you can't match that price? I kept going back and telling her, no, you're not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing apples to oranges.
Right.
And there's just no way it can be done.
And I don't understand this, because if you look at two cars, I guess, you can easily say, oh, this car is a nice car to get back and forth to work.
Right.
But if I really want to drive to Florida twice a year, or I want to race, or I want to haul a bunch
more
of stuff,
kids.
Yeah, then I need a different car, and it's going to cost me more. It's basically the same idea. If you want a computer that only does email and very light web browsing, I can sell you a computer for a few hundred dollars that will make you happy. But if
yes.
you actually want to use the computer for real things, then you pay more.
And she went, you know, she left ticked off.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, and I'm trying to explain to her. I said, well, she goes, you're just not listening to me. I said, no, here's what it is. You want to do this, this, and this. And to be honest with you, those boxes aren't going to cut it. No way. You're going to be coming back and saying, well, it's slow, or we'll handle it. Yeah, because you folks get focused in on the price.
Well, that's right. The biggest number on the page.
Yep.
And, you know, you sit there and say, oh, just simple things. And like we've said time and time again, once you all of a sudden start saying, oh, I want to play these games on there and this and that all of a sudden adds another zero to the end of that machine because, you know, it's going to be a lot more.
Yep, yep. RAM is not cheap. Hard drives are going through the roof.
Hard drives, 1 terabyte hard drives right now, had literally over tripled in price.
Yep.
So a terabyte drive used to be 60, 70 bucks, right?
Now you're over 200 bucks.
Incredible.
Yeah, Thailand's underwater.
I mean, I think they're over 200 bucks. I think it was like 2.25.
Yeah.
And I think it's only going to get worse because as the hard drives, as a matter of fact, my distributors, you know, it's like I'll have to go with 2 500s. That's what they got left in stock. Because right now, you know, with the holiday season and everything else, it's going to be tough. And that's where, again, I think the tablets are going to have a big impact right now. Granted, you know, because they're limited, they don't have the moving parts, you know, like the hard drives and everything else. And they can still do the basic stuff, like we've been saying, going and doing word processing. You can do your email. You can search, you know, surf the web. You can put it on all the different apps that'll keep track of your grocery lists and everything else. And, I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, but, you know, when you folks sit there, and like I say, you know, champagne tastes but a beer man's pocketbook.
That's right.
As my grandfather used to say.
Yeah. Well, and that's why some of these tablets are possibly useful. I mean, if they're able to do things like Angry Birds and a bunch of the Zynga games that you now play on Facebook,
right?
You can now get a bunch of them. I don't know if you can get them on the Apple market, but you can get them in the Android market. So if you wanted to play Words with Friends,
you don't
have to go onto Facebook to do it. You can play it on your tablet or
definitely got
Bejeweled
that.
Or you know, whatever those are. The point being that if I can buy one of those for $200 or $300, now I'm happy.
Yeah.
But if that's what I'm limiting myself to, if I then turn around and say I want to watch movies, now it may be $400. If I want to be able to write stuff, well, I got to have something with a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you really just one little addition changes the equation completely.
Well, it's like my friend Bill. I was talking to him yesterday, and I've been talking to him a couple times about, you know, he's going to go get another iPad. You know, but he's going, the price. I go, well, wait a minute. You can get an Android tablet. It's cheaper. And, well, what about this app? It's there. You know, the applets that are out there in the Android market is phenomenal. I mean, literally, A to Z and anything else you want, you know. Well, what about word processing? It's in there. What about if she wants to get her email? Yep, they can do it. She can surf. He goes, well, then she's all set.
Yep.
I says, well, then you can get this instead. So I got to come up with a few different brand names for them.
Right, and what you really have to do is sit down and make a serious list of what it is you really intend to do.
Yeah, because...
And not leave out anything and be willing to... Then you can sit down and say, okay, for this much money, you can do these 5 things.
Exactly.
If you add $100, you can do these 2 things on top of it. Add another $100, you can do these 3 things. And then people can make their decision. But what they have to understand is there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. At some point, you got to pony up the money to do the thing.
Well, that's why I personally like to have folks, you know, email me or that and say, here's what I want to do with it. And I'll ask him, is that all you're going to do with it? And again, you know, that's, well, my son might want to do this.
Right.
You know, because I'll ask, now who's using the computer? I like to ask the questions. And instead of you folks just going out there and, you know.
And putting a box in your cart.
Yeah, and saying, here you go, have fun. Yeah.
You know, if you come to me and say, I need a computer for email and for light web surfing, and I go, okay, and then you come back to me and say, but I can't play Skyrim. Well,
yeah.
Geez. You know, what do you expect?
Mm-hmm.
All right, listen. It's the end of Uncle Dave's Story Hour. We are done with that. So get off your footy jammies and put your empty mug of hot cocoa in the dish drainer, and we'll put Uncle Dave back on the shelf. And in the meantime, we're going to take a break because I think it's going to take a little to get him on the shelf. We don't want you to be listening to the rumble. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. two powerful media companies, the Walt Disney Company and YouTube.
I've heard of those guys.
You have. Are betting that a new partnership will help them surmount separate but equally worrisome hurdles as they each strive for greater web dominance. The deal announced on Monday is small on its surface. Disney Interactive Media and YouTube, a division of Google, will spend a combined $10 million to $15 million on original video series. Those shorts will be produced by Disney and distributed on a co-branded channel on Disney.com and YouTube. The channel will also include amateur video culled from the torrent uploaded to YouTube every single day. But the alliance is striking because of what it tacitly acknowledges about each company's weaknesses. Disney, currently working on yet another overhaul of its website, is conceding that its own brand is not a powerful enough draw among children looking for video online. YouTube is viewed as being cooler. Also has many women in scanty clothing. So a reverse is of... What?
Huh?
I stumbled across them.
Wait, what?
So in a reverse of go-it-alone web strategy, Disney, no, that's cool. Disney will go fishing for youngsters. That's true. Disney will go fishing for youngsters on YouTube, in addition to making YouTube a prominent part of its own site, something the company hopes will coax children to stay longer. It is imperative to go where our audience is, says James A. Pataro, co-president of Disney Interactive. He added that the idea is to bring Disney's legacy of storytelling to a new generation of families and Disney enthusiasts on the platforms they prefer. Disney Interactive has been losing money, over $300 million in the last year. And Mr. Pataro, part of a new leadership team at the division, which apparently was sorely needed, is under pressure to create web videos that can be monetized quickly. Disney.com's traffic has also been dropping at an alarming rate. Unique visitors totaled 12.7 million in September, down from 17.9 million in June, according to the measurement company Comscore. Seasonality does affect traffic to some degree. YouTube hopes, but you would think for Disney it would be actually up. Well, YouTube hopes to gain something from the Disney brand as well, namely credibility among parents, many of whom are thrilled at setting their youngsters loose on a site where the videos can be ragged and provocative, and the comments even more so. The company wants to compete with cable television for ad dollars by adding more professional videos. Disney and YouTube sound like a match made in heaven. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Pat did in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
I have a Windows XP, and the other day the screen locked up on me, so I turned the power button off.
Yeah.
And now it won't start again. All I get is this screen that says, "We're sorry for the inconvenience. You know, you can start it in safe mode with something else," and it keeps us cycling this thing here.
Can you get in safe mode?
Can't get in safe mode. I click on it, and it just goes back to the screen.
What you're going to have to do is grab your Windows XP CD.
Okay.
And install Windows over Windows.
The recovery CD?
Yeah.
Not the recovery CD.
No. The original Windows CD.
Okay.
If you only have a recovery CD,
pardon?
You cannot do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. My kids have been trying because I don't know anything about this stuff.
Yeah, you'd have to take it in or just wipe it and restore it. That's going to lose everything, though.
See, the restore CD sets it back to the way it was when you first bought it.
Right out of the box.
Okay.
Which means you lose everything you have on there.
Okay.
So if you've got pictures, documents, whatever,
sure.
Those are gone.
The one thing you can try, and I had this happen to a client about 3 weeks ago, got into what that's called this boot loop, where it would boot up and then let you pick which XP you wanted to try and start, and you'd pick one, and then it would just restart the machine. We found that it was the drive that was starting to go, and if you take it into a shop, this is likely what's going on, especially if it's an XP machine, so it's probably a little bit older.
Yeah,
we run diagnostics.
Yep.
On it and make sure all the hardware is okay, and then reload Windows over Windows, and then that way you don't lose any of your programs or anything else.
There are third party things you can do to if you're comfortable, if you feel better taking it in, definitely take it in. If you want to try something on your own, you can go to grc.com. There's a program you can buy there called SpinRite, and it's less than $100. You download it. It's very, very small. You burn it to a CD. You boot from the CD, and you let it work on your drive. And it can take anywhere from half an hour to several hours to run.
Or days.
Yeah. I was lucky that the one I did only took 2.5 hours. Hooray.
Okay.
So once we did that, the machine did boot properly again because it mapped the damaged parts of the drive to areas of the drive that were not damaged. And the problem is that once a drive starts developing bad sectors on it, it's kind of like rust. It's only going to get worse over time. So once you've got it booting properly, the next thing to do is to make a solid backup of anything you care about, okay. Then pull that drive out and throw it away because it's just not able to store information reliably anymore.
Okay, and someone said something about bring it in for a diagnostic.
Who's
that again?
Dave.
I'm Dave.
Okay, Dave. And what would, like, phone number or address or something?
Tell you what, just go to soundbites.org.
You'll see several people listed there, including Dave Enright's shop, where he fixes PCs.
What was that name again?
Dave Enright.
No, Enright and Deary PC.
Right, I think I have the old one on the site, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's one place you can
give
go.
Me the new...
Yeah, okay.
Okay, sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, sir.
All right, have a good one.
It is Enright and Deary PC, but I still think I have the old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'll have Dan.
I did put up the.
That, and I sent you back, and thank you very much. Yep. We got that updated. So the folks that is a FYI, I put up usually every year, and it was a week or so late this time. I'll admit it. I had some other stuff going on, but I got up the recommended requirements that you should look at when going out to purchase a PC.
Okay.
You know, again.
Put a little primer on what to look for.
Well, you know, it's kind of the middle of the road again.
So that you're not looking at that big price number on the flyer.
Exactly. Right. You know, does it have this? Does this? You can more or less, and based on your needs. And I say, you know, that this is the middle of the road. It's not the high end, it's not the low.
Right.
It'll do some gaming. Do you want a super fast? Well, then maybe you got to kick it up a notch. And that's the other thing, folks. When you're going out this season and doing shopping for software, look on the side of the box because, you know, folks are already out there looking. Look on the side of the box and see the system requirements. You should have a good idea of that because nothing more frustrating than you buy this particular game, you take it home, say like that gentleman that had XP.
Right.
Versus a software now that's written for Vista or Windows 7.
Yep.
It'll probably run on XP, but you're not going to be happy with the performance because it's expecting a lot more power. They just assume that you can.
Right.
So that's the way they do it. And, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this gift doesn't work. To save yourself a lot of aggravation, check that out.
Yep.
Get to know what you have. You can print it off. As a matter of fact, that one sheet, you under system requirements, you know, under the system, you can pull up there and it'll tell you what you got in there and take that with you because it'll tell you the processor, what version of Windows you're using, and that.
That's very important.
Yep.
Very helpful.
Yep. But again, a lot of people don't need more than a tablet these days.
Yep.
So if you go to somebody like Dave or to Dennis, you can talk to them about tablets and what it is that they can give you and can't give you.
Right.
Because there will be negatives.
Oh, yeah.
But as long as you understand that, as long as you're willing to live within the strictures of that device. For example, I work has an iPad and an Asus Transformer.
Right.
I really love the Transformer mainly because of the keyboard. It has essentially a little clamshell. You take the tablet and you lock it into the keyboard, and it closes like a clamshell.
Yeah.
So I can carry it around all at once, but I can just release it and have it as a tablet to walk around with as well.
There are a couple of different models of very, very similar devices for the iPad as well. I myself picked up a Bluetooth keyboard from Targus. Very useful. Because I find that typing anything more than a couple of sentences on the iPad's keyboard, first of all, you can't touch type on it the way you would on a regular keyboard. If you rest your fingers on the screen, it's going to pick it up as a key, and you're going to be mistyping all over the place.
All over the place.
So for a guy who's developed touch typing skills, the external keyboard is definitely the way to go. I highly recommend it, unless you're somebody who is only looking to type comments on YouTube or or small things in other places, or Twitter.
If you're typing comments on YouTube, you don't care about
or
spelling, or
we'll say something potentially more useful, something like Twitter or Facebook comments about, you know, pictures your friend put up. Anything more than that, if you're typing longer emails or you know, manuscript or something else, then a keyboard is definitely what you want. Plan on spending another $50 on that.
Right, and it can be a Bluetooth keyboard. The nice thing about the one that I have is it isn't Bluetooth, so it can't be sniffed. Although that's most people.
I hear you talk about that. You seem nervous about that.
I'm nervous about it for certain people at work who are typing confidential data for students. HIPAA data and for HIPAA and FERPA.
Right.
For the health and safety and for student stuff.
That stuff has to
be secure. And I have to be able to prove to our auditors that it's secure.
Right. Otherwise, you're
in
deep.
And it doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter how far-fetched the possibility is. If there is a possibility, they have to know about it. There are programs you can buy now that I can take my phone and set it down next to your keyboard, which if we're sitting in a class, people do that all the time.
Sure.
And it will actually figure out from the vibrations on the accelerometer what you type.
Wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even need to sniff your Bluetooth, which I could also do, by the way. And I don't even have to be that close. I can be within 10 feet, in some cases 100 feet. But if I'm just...
The next table over.
So most of the time you don't care. But if you're logging into something... I would get your, if it's Bluetooth 2.1, then there's some encryption. If it's 1.0 or 1.1, not so much. But it's an interesting little problem that we've gotten ourselves into. We've made some things so convenient that we forget how inherently unsecured they are.
Yep, it's true.
All right, that beautiful music in the background tells me that we are done for another week. You are free to move about the universe and continue along with your lives because we are done with you for another week. We want to thank you for sitting in thrall for the last 2 hours as we inundated you with acronyms that you probably could not care less about. For Dave Enright, for Dennis Worster, I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you all for joining us for the last 2 hours in the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And we specifically want to thank those of you who became members of the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. George is in next with some of the best German music you will ever hear, so stay tuned.